Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, Minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, where the weather is slightly cooler than it was because fall is in the air. That's what I tell myself anyway, even when it's still 99 degrees out there. But it is cooler at night, so that's nice. Today, we explore one of my favorite subjects, and that is our connection to the natural world. And joining me is Sandra Ingerman. She's the co-author with Lynn Roberts of the lovely book, Speaking with Nature, Awakening to the Deep Wisdom of the Earth. And Sandra is a well-respected shamanic teacher, author of 10 books and 7 audio programs. And she writes popular columns and leads workshops across the world. She was also chosen as one of the top 10 spiritual leaders of 2013 in the November-December issue of Spirituality and Health. How do you follow that up? You know, now I'm the top 10 leader in 2013. What am I going to do in 2014 and 15, et cetera? But it's a joy to welcome Sandra to today's show. So glad you could join us.
Yeah, thanks so much, and thanks so much for the invitation. And September 1st is usually my happiest day of the year because I'm a fall, winter person myself.
Uh-huh. That's right. We're actually on September 1st today, aren't we?
So, yeah,
breaking through.
Yes.
Yeah, and we've had exceptionally hot weather in Fort Worth because it went up to 106 degrees, I think, for a week or so. And, yeah, that's hot. That's hot. And so it's nice to experience a little less than that kind of intensity. So let's talk about the genesis of the book. And one of the interesting things, of course, is that Lynn, during the period that this book was written, was living in the whole rainforest on the Olympic Peninsula. And so immersed in that kind of natural environment, very wet and moist and full of mosses and everything. And you were, still are in the high desert of Santa Fe, very different ecosystem. And so there's this contrast, isn't there, between what she's experiencing and what you were experiencing, but also the commonalities. And it makes for a fascinating read in that sense, because you get the two different views, if you like, in two very different environments.
Yeah, well, that was very intentional on our part to our goal or our passion, both of us really want to help people reconnect to nature during this time on the planet, because from my point of view, all the illness we're seeing both personally and environmentally is because we have disconnected from nature. And so one of the things that we were trying to show in the book was that wherever you live, in the locale where you live, there are going to be what we call different nature beings. So the plants and the trees and the insects and the beings that live on the earth, air, and water in your area, they're all going to be different. So in the book, we try to inspire people with Lynn telling stories about her connection with the nature beings where she lived, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're in the high desert with me in the same chapter, hearing me talk about either the same nature being or a complementary nature being, to allow people to use their imaginations and to start wondering about the nature beings where you're living personally, and what are the different lessons and teachings that you're getting from the different locale and the spirit of the land where you live personally, instead of saying, here's just how to connect to nature in general. It was more, how about connecting to nature where you live right now?
Right, yeah, because it's available everywhere. I think I've talked about this on my show before. You know, there's a tendency to sort of isolate nature. You know, we got these national parks and we preserve them, and they're special and they're beautiful, and then we trash the rest of the environment. You know, and it's great to have in the national parks, of course it is, and we do, you know, they are very precious. But we also have to look out after our own backyards and our own environment in an urban area too. And I think that's, you know, as important as maintaining national parks, right? Nature is everywhere. It's not just in a special place.
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. I lived my first 18 years of my life in Brooklyn. And when I was a little kid, I was just so entranced by nature. And you can say nature in Brooklyn, but, you know, all the neighborhoods had trees in front of their house. And when I was a little kid, I used to come home from school and I would sing to the tree and the birds outside of my house. And I would lie on the ground at night and sing to the moon. And so it is so important to be able to go beyond the bricks and the cement and to really tap in to the spirit of nature where you live. And so I have so many students who live in the cities and talk about how as they're walking to a bus or to a train station to go to work, there's their favorite tree that they say hi to every day, and there's always the sky to look up at and watching the different cloud formations and noticing different messages that might come through those different cloud formations that can inspire you, or breeze at a time in your life when you need some support. A breeze might come through and gently touch you in a way that feels really good to you. So it is. It's so important right now for us to all. It's wonderful to be able to get out and go to national parks. And it is so important to do everything that we can to protect them. But it is also important to connect on a daily basis with nature where you live. And it's not only important for environmental issues, which it is, because when we wake up to the power of nature, we wake up to how important it is for us to change our behavior towards the environment, but it also improves our state of well-being on an emotional and a physical level.
Right, exactly. And we've talked about that on the show, too, the discipline of eco-psychology, you know, the connection between the natural world and our sanity, basically. And studies have been done about, you know, children who've been introduced to nature are less violent and more balanced in all aspects of their lives than those who, you know, are in a built environment all the time, you know, surrounded by houses. I got to share an interesting experience I had the other day. In my backyard, a hummingbird, had knocked itself out because it had hit, I guess, a window in our back part of our house and was on the ground. We thought it was dead, and then it started to move, and we thought, oh no, it's maybe it's just got concussion or whatever. So I picked it up, and it had its tongue sticking out, and we fed it a little bit of water. But just before it flew off, its throat began to glow, and it was a ruby throated hummingbird, but it glowed with a sort of an orange glow, and it literally looked like embers. And I was totally awe inspired by this because I never really picked up a hummingbird. They're hard to see normally because they move so fast. So you got a really good look at it, you know, and then it took off. You know, it was just wondrous to see it flying again. But you know, what a gift, isn't it? You know, and that just happened. You know, we thought it was dead, and then it starts glowing with these embers, and it was like, wow, thank you, you know, thank you for the gift that you are, and also the magnificence of God's creation, and that God can create something as beautiful as that. So it was a lovely moment.
Yeah, and you know, I think also what's important, and you can hear it in your voice as you share the story, is in our culture we have gotten so caught up in the material world and working, and people are so stressed out, and you can actually see the light going out of the eyes of people, loved ones, friends in our community, and sometimes it's hard to see the light in our own eyes. And when we connect with nature on the level that you're talking about, of helping a hummingbird and see that glow, or when a breeze does come and touch you at exactly the right moment, or a rainbow, just as you're wondering if you've made the right decision, or you see a beautiful rainbow in the sky, or you have some kind of unusual connection with a bird or an animal, right where you live, light comes back to your eyes again. A particular joy comes back. Life takes on a different meaning. It's not so flat surfaced. It becomes more 3D and radiant and alive. And so that's where so much of the healing happens, too, for both you and the natural world also, because there's the principle of reciprocity and just the fact that you reached out and helped that hummingbird. At some point, you're going to get some kind of help back in your life for the service that you have performed in behalf of that living being.
Right. Yeah, because everything's connected, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's not you doing it so that, oh, I want to be blessed, you know. You're doing it because that's the right thing to do. But it's nice to know that, you know, the universe will conspire then to bring you good, you know, to be in the flow of endless good. And no flat screen can do that, it seems, you know. Well, yeah, ultimately, you know, our phones and our TVs, you know, can't provide that deeply visceral, deeply spiritual connection that we're talking about. And that's such a powerful thing. You know, one thing I want to ask you about, you know, there's a lot, I've interviewed a lot of shamanic people folks who use that modality, that doorway, if you like, you know, how would you describe it? You know, being a shaman, what is that?
Well, shamanism is a universal practice, and it's the oldest spiritual practice of humankind. It actually dates over 100,000 years from looking at different archaeological evidence in different areas around the world. And so people all over the world have practiced shamanism, and all of us who are alive today probably had ancestors who practiced shamanism. And it is a spiritual practice, and there are different aspects to it, different levels of it. The word shaman itself comes from the Tungus tribe in Siberia, and it means one who sees in the dark or healer. And a shaman is a man or woman who is able to go into an altered state of consciousness. And this is not an out-of-body experience. It's just where the shaman is able to lift the veils between the seen and unseen worlds and to step into a hidden reality where there is nature again, amazing nature, amazing wisdom from nature. But there are also a variety of compassionate, helping spirits who are looking down on the human condition from a different perspective than we can see. It's like we're in the game. We're so busy playing the game that we can't see around us, where the spirits are in the bleachers, and they could look at what's happening in our lives. And the shaman would take a journey with some form of percussion or drum or rattles or some musical instrument, song and dance, and would move into the unseen worlds and connect with helping spirits who could provide information, wisdom, and healing for people in the community. But the other level of shamanism, which I really like to focus on, I like to focus on both teaching shamanic healing, but shamanism is also a way of life where everybody who lived in a shamanic community was born knowing how to live in harmony with nature, how to align their thoughts and words to create the vision that they wanted to create for the community at large, because everything was about community and being responsible for helping to sustain a healthy community, and how to work with their daydreams to be able to vision a good life. And so there's the healing aspect of shamanism and the divination aspect of shamanism, but there's also the aspect of shamanism which is how do we live a healthy way of life that creates harmony and health for ourselves and all in the web of life that we're connected to.
Right, beautifully put. And I love the idea, I actually did a sermon this week on Dweller on the Threshold, and we had the Van Morrison song as part of our music, but the idea of that liminal space, you know, between one room and another, between the inner and the outer worlds, it's a powerful place, isn't it? And the veil, when it's thin, you know, we can step between both worlds, and so the spirits, if you like, or the energy beings, whatever we want to call them, they're very much available, because there is no gap, really. Right. Only in our consciousness we create a big wall sometimes, and we can't see them, even though they're, like you say, they're in front of us, they're on the bleachers with us, but we remain, you know, remain oblivious to them. And that's a sad thing in a way, isn't it? We have this, so much that's available to us, so much splendor all around us and within us, and yet we settle for something so much lesser.
Yeah, and, you know, basically we grew up in a society, in a culture that taught us that the invisible worlds were just in our imagination. Stop talking to your imaginary friends. Kids are all little natural shamans. They're going around talking to spirits all the time. And in the culture that we live in, that part of life has been, you know, taken away from us, and we were told to close those veils down. And we're seeing the impact of that again because of the illness that we're seeing, the level of unhappiness and the lack of joy that we're seeing in people's lives. And so I'm just so delighted that there's a huge resurgence right now. It's beyond my wildest imagination, and teaching shamanism around the world for 30 years, to see the huge resurgence in shamanism again, and how people are ready and willing and now, you know, really wanting to step forward into making those deep spiritual connections.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, having been a minister for 30 years now, you know, I noticed the same thing. And in all levels of society, you know, it used to be that, for instance, doctors, physicians in general, were not interested in anything alternative. It was very much allopathic medicine. And now they take great care to, you know, find out what kind of supplements people are taking. They're open to prayer, they're open to the connection to the divine. Hospitals are producing, you know, prayer books and everything. Guided meditations are happening. These are all aspects, I think, of people opening to something larger than just the mechanistic systems around us, and that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? It's it speaks well for how we're shifting our worldview. Folks, I'm with Sandra Ingerman. She co-wrote with Lynn Roberts this book we're discussing, Speaking with Nature, Awakening to the Deep Wisdom of the Earth. We're going to take a break. listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll look at some of the power animals and birds and plants and trees that that Sandra and Lynn discuss in the book. So join us in a couple of minutes.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives. At the base of all life is the infinite wellspring of Source, and each of us has a unique way of expressing that Source as an individualized soul. Do you enjoy the company of inspiring people who are living on purpose? Do you want to live joyfully attuned to your own unique soul expression? Host Reverend Kristen Powell welcomes you to join the gathering of souls who live this way. You'll meet artists, naturalists, and other soulful expressions that will inspire you to call forth the most alive, passionate version of yourself. Get into the natural stream of your own soul by tuning into Soul Stream live every Wednesday at noon Central Time on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm talking with Sandra Ingerman about the book Speaking with Nature, and since we're doing a shout out about me, folks, if you'd like to, I've got an article in the latest Unity magazine called Staying Awake, 7 Strategies for Doing That, and you can also get it online by going to unity.org. I think it's up in the e-version of Unity magazine, so check that out. But right now I'm talking, as I said, with Sandra Ingerman, and I want to talk about some of the animals and minerals even, and trees that you speak about in the book, and their spiritual significance. And there's one chapter on silt and sand, you know, and Lynn talks about the silt that comes down out of the glaciers there in the Olympics and creates that beautiful alpine water that we may be familiar with, a sort of a milky turquoise color. And then you talk about sand, and when you think of New Mexico, you think of a desiccated landscape and a lot of sand, but also a lot of life, right? This is the thing about a desert, I think. Some of us think a desert is kind of barren and everything, but it's not, is it? It's full of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's architectural in a way. You know, there's so many trees, say, for instance, in the hole that you don't really notice each one. You feel the presence of it. But in a place like Santa Fe, each tree has a sort of an energy of its own because it stands out in sort of an architectural way in the landscape. And I like that about deserts.
Yeah, there's definitely a power living in the desert, and Santa Fe being the high desert. So there's, you know, a real difference between the low desert and the high desert. And one of the things that Lynn and I were trying to do, because there are different books on shamanism about, you know, what a particular animal means or interpreting different nature beings for people. And we were really trying to move away from that and, again, try and get people bodily connected to the landscape where each one of you live on personally. And in the desert, I wrote a lot in the book right outside my house. I'm really lucky. I live outside of the city of Santa Fe. And out where I live, it's kind of funny, we're called the extraterrestrial zone. I don't have a clue why, but the area of Santa Fe where I live is called the extraterrestrial zone by the state of New Mexico. And one of the laws is that you're not allowed to fence off your property so that people can walk through a large expanse of land, and people can ride their horses if they choose to. And so there's an arroyo, a really long arroyo, which is a dry riverbed. And so every day, you know, I can take a long walk through the dry riverbed, and it's down in the land so that you can't really see people's houses very much. And so even though I'm living in a very populated area, when I get down into the arroyo, it's like I'm out in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, it's a really magical place, and I feel really grateful to be able to be here. And the trees have such personality because of what they've had to go through with all the elements. You know, we have these strong winds, and then we get these brutally cold winters, and then the heat of summer. So, you know, you have the cottonwood trees that take on just an incredible character where you can see so much energy and vitality and strength, a strength that really inspires us of, wow, if this plant can grow here with no water, you know, I have that same strength inside of myself. And then the juniper trees, you know, they're so hardy and want to survive. Their roots will actually grow down 30 feet into the earth, which is pretty amazing. And they also have this incredible character. And then we have the pinyon pines here that have that lovely smell, and people burn the pinyon wood in the winter, and, you know, everybody loves to smell that smell. But there is a character here. And again, the plants, how they grow, and we did, we're still in drought here in Santa Fe, but we did get a little bit more rain this year. And it's just amazing how many plants ended up growing up in this arroyo just from the little bits of rain. And one of the lessons that I try to teach people, and Lynn and I both brought this through in the book, is how plants and trees and other nature beings have such a passion for life, and how they find ways to adapt. And just a little bit of water, and these new beautiful flowering plants will come up here in the desert that are stunning, are just exquisite. And again, that's something that's so needed in our own culture, is people have lost that sense of passion because there's so much drudgery in just trying to get through life. And so one of the things that is such a beautiful thing to get in the desert is how cacti will bloom, and the incredible blooms, and how there are these amazing flowering plants that come up with just such a little bit of water. And then the incredible character of the trees and the faces in the trees, and how you can see all that they've been through, but they continue to grow towards the light.
I was in Sedona in the earlier part of this year, first time I've ever been there, and we hiked up into Boynton Canyon, which is a box canyon, and I was amazed at the varying ecosystems that existed there in the desert. You know, there was the lodgepole pines and the Douglas firs, and then a passage through some thickets, and so much variety there, you know, that and bird life also that was very varied. And I'm sure the animals were around us. We didn't see that many, but you could feel their presence. And it's, you know, the adaptability. I was recently in Japan, and on a totally different, seemingly different tack. We were looking at the world's longest suspension bridge, you know, that crosses from one island to the other, and the ingenuity that went into that. But to me, it's the same idea. You know, they had to adapt to 186-mile-an-hour winds. They had to adapt to earthquakes and tsunamis and everything. And so the bridge is built with all these specifications. But, it's an organic thing. You know, it's saying, yes, we can adapt, and nature adapts. Human beings can do the same. We can be creative no matter the circumstance. And so it's a great antidote for fear, I think, and the impossibility. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, we're going to hell, and we're going to have these natural disasters. You know, America's going to be overthrown or whatever. I better stock up on ammo, you know, et cetera. I love the idea that, you know, they had this seemingly impossible passage to cross there with a bridge and yet did it, you know. That's the best of the human spirit is taking a lead from nature, I think, and its incredible adaptability. You know, instead of fighting it, working with it. You know, the bridge resonates with the winds. You know, it can expand 7 feet. You know, with the heat, etc. So it's not fighting nature. It's in harmony with it.
Right. Yeah. And you know, to go along with that, I mean, the human ingenuity, we haven't even begun to tap into the creative potential of what human beings can do. We know we don't use that much of our brain, and again, nature, it can really inspire us. And also nature is a real teacher for us around the cycles of death and rebirth. And so in our culture, people are so afraid of death. And in shamanic cultures, death was not seen as an end. Death was seen as a transition. And death was celebrated because when anything died, when a being died or a person died, there was always going to be new life to replace that. Of course, there were grieving ceremonies that have always been done to grieve the people and the beings that die either through natural causes or through some artificial kind of cause. But one of the things that nature teaches us, and one of the things that was so prevalent in shamanic cultures, was that understanding of cycles and living in the cycles of death and rebirth, and that there isn't an end. And so when we go out into nature and, you know, our hearts are completely broken by some of the clear cutting that goes on, without consciousness of the contribution that these trees bring to our health and well-being in our environment, you also start to see those new plants that start to grow up immediately. As something dies, something new is reborn. And one of the chapters that Lynn and I wrote about was about the plants that grow after a fire. That, you know, first fire comes through, which fire is very healing for the land because land needs fire to regenerate. And for some of the seeds to get enough heat to be able to germinate and to grow. So, you know, fire is like us washing ourselves. It's a really healing thing for the land. And then you start to see after these big forest fires, which I know our hearts are breaking right now because there are so many fires that we're watching through the media. But then you see afterwards these amazing new plants that start to grow and bring this new life. And so it's important for us right now because as a culture we do fear death. And that has had a lot of ramifications on friends and loved ones who are dying. Oftentimes a friend or a loved one is dying and people don't want to talk to them about their death. It's all about, oh, don't worry, you're going to get better. You know, you're going to get the treatment you need instead of being able to provide that love and that comfort and support as they make their transition in a graceful way. So nature teaches us a lot about creativity and helps human beings tap into their creativity, but nature is also an incredible teacher about death and rebirth and about phases of life. And, you know, we're getting ready to go into another phase in the northern hemisphere as we're starting to look at fall coming through and letting go of what no longer serves you and letting the earth compost that so that new growth can come in the spring. So, you know, there's so much that we can learn from nature about creativity, but also letting go of the fear and learning how to flow with the river of life and flow with the cycles and get more in harmony with the cycles and to realize that everything changes and not to be so afraid of the change, but to realize that the changes are bringing us to a really good place.
Right. Again, it's all about being organic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being connected to the eternal verities rather than the glamour. You know, Alice Bailey talks about the glamour being a problem, and she means those things that distract us, you know, that seem shiny and exciting, like the flat screen again, but they
right.
have no lasting and sustaining power, you know, that ultimately empty. They're smoke and mirrors. And if we spend our whole life, you know, in that superficial way, you know, at the end we wake up and think, well, wait a minute, what have I been doing here? I've been living a rich and deep life. And that's what the invitation is here, I think, is to get into that. I know that Lynn talks about Mike Dodge, I think his name is, you know, who features on the National Geographic show. He's famous for walking around the forest barefoot. And I don't think he does it all the time, but he does it quite a bit. And he says you have a totally new appreciation for nature and for life in general by going barefoot. And I think there's a movement out there called earthing, isn't there, where people go barefoot. And there's power to that, isn't there? Because it's a visceral, you know, the Bible says take off your feet, take off your shoes, you know, you're standing on holy ground. Right. And, you know, it's true in a literal sense too, isn't it? That we protect ourselves so much for being in touch with raw nature.
Yeah, the scientific evidence, I mean, science is now proving what shamanic cultures knew for thousands of years. But, you know, we always wait for science to prove things and to tell us what to do. It's just who we are because we live in such a rational, you know, everything is about understanding things in a rational way. And science has proven that if you put your feet on the earth for 20 minutes a day, it will provide physical healing for you for whatever is going on in your life. And also, as I'm a licensed psychotherapist, I always try and bring in the emotional component to that too, not just the physical healing, but how connecting with the earth can help you feel more uplifted and help people to move through depressive states of consciousness and also anxiety. And so, you know, Mick Dodge, I never got the opportunity to meet him. He sounds like an extraordinary man. You know, he lives out in the middle of nowhere in the whole rainforest and has that opportunity. But again, if you're living in Fort Worth, Texas, or Brooklyn, New York, or whatever city you happen to be living in, there are always parks where you live. And to go to a park and just find a nice place to sit. You know, this is a normal thing to do. It doesn't make you look abnormal. People love to go to parks and sit in nature and to take your shoes off and to put your feet on the ground. And if you are going through an actual physical or emotional illness, to try as much as possible to find a way to go to a park on a daily basis and just take off your shoes. And if you don't want to walk, you don't need to walk in order to earth. It just really is about taking off your shoes and having your feet be on the earth, and so that your own electrical current can harmonize with that of the earth. How we would say that in shamanism, your own heartbeat will connect and harmonize with the heartbeat of the earth, which brings about, you know, just an incredible amount of health. And so this is something we can all do. You know, Mick just chose a way of life that gives him that particular opportunity. And of course, I have fantasies of going out into the wilderness and living in the wilderness, but that hasn't been my destiny. But I can still go out and put my feet on the earth.
There we go. All right.
We can all do that. And I have students who had terminal illnesses and went out on the land and lived on the land and laid on the earth every day and really got healing. So,
right,
you know, it does happen.
Well, don't do it while you're mowing the lawn, though, folks, because I had a Unity minister friend one time who mowed his lawn in a flip-flop and chopped his big toe off and almost died. Ooh. So he got help, luckily, before he bled to death. But, you know, we have to balance earthing with sensitivity to protecting ourselves, being intelligent. There we go. All right, we're at a break. I'm with Sandra Ingerman talking about the book Speaking with Nature, Awakening to the Deep Wisdom of the Earth. When we come back, we'll talk about corn and black bear. Join us then.
Are you ready for deeper spiritual breakthroughs? Have you wondered how to apply spiritual principles to your everyday life in practical ways? Do you feel your soul is calling you to deeper purposes? Join Reverend Galen McDowell live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms, a discussion on how God within you, as you, is the power to transform your life. If you really believe that consciousness determines your experiences and that you are an individualized expression of God, join us as we help awaken and transform the consciousness of humanity. We will discuss, through lecture, live interviews, and call-in questions, spiritual healing, prayer, prosperity, forgiveness, new thought views about eternal life, and much more. The world is waiting for your truth transformation, only on Unity Online Radio.
Been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Yeah, if you want to email me, just email me at my name, pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Always welcome questions, comments, ideas, so make that happen. Also, if you love this show and other shows on the Unity Online Radio Network, considering clicking the donate button and sending some money in to keep the show and all the other shows. What is it now? 35 other shows on the air, The Voice of an Awakening World. It's interesting, isn't it, to me, how certain plants become gods almost. And when you talk about the power of corn to the first peoples, especially in the Southwest, and we see that true of other plants and animal species, you know, throughout the world. The sacred cows of India, for instance, come to mind. But anything that sustains us and gives us the nectar or the provision of life, you know, the milk, and so many ways we use the corn too, for instance, so many creative ways of preparing that corn. It's interesting.
Well, in the Southwest and among some of the people here, corn and beans were the only food that they could grow without water. There are many native traditions that just didn't have any water and depended on the infrequent rains to come through, and corn was one of them. And so corn was seen to be a gift from the holy ones, and corn is honored, and it's really I think a really beautiful. In the Hopi tradition, the Hopi people actually have a practice where they sing up the corn, where they use their voices and go out and sing to the corn, giving thanks to it. And so in speaking with nature, I tell people to, you know, try that with even a house plant. Go to, you know, sit with one of your house plants and sing to it and talk to it and notice how your relationship changes and how all of a sudden this becomes a sacred being in your life. It might not be like among the Hopi and some of the first people who depended on corn because that was the only food that they had. But there's a power that comes from establishing a sacred relationship with another living being. And so I try to get people to connect with their houseplants in a similar way to how some of the first people would do that. But you know, in shamanic cultures and in indigenous cultures, you didn't have stores where you went in and bought your food. And so relationships, spiritual relationships, were always established with the animal in the area that you were going to actually need to eat. And, you know, like in Hawaii, one of the power animals that is talked about is shark, and the people really needed to have a good relationship with shark to feel protected in the water when they did go in to do their fishing or whatever they had to do to sustain their life. And in some shamanic cultures, different rituals and ceremonies are done to honor the spirit of the animal that sacrifices themselves. And in the Southwest where I live, there are dancers at different times of the years. There in some of the pueblos, there are corn dances that are done in the old ancient ways. The dance has been passed down through generation after generation, and deer dances and turtle dances and dances to honor those beings that sacrificed themselves. And so there was, as I said earlier in the show, in shamanism, it's really important to understand the principle of reciprocity and that you establish a relationship with nature and nature will establish a relationship with you. You honor a nature being, and that nature being is going to honor you. You honor the earth, air, water, and the sun that gives us life, and we will not see those incredible climatic changes that we're seeing right now because earth, air, water, and the sun would honor us in return. But right now what we're seeing is an example of being so out of harmony with nature and not understanding the principle of reciprocity that we're not seeing that honoring process in return.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting how so many of the rituals that were powerful in pre-industrial societies in the West, you know, have now become diminutive. They've been reduced to childhood. For instance, many of the fairy tales or the celebrations like Halloween, you know, are now for kids or whatever. But really, these are great festivals of meaning to all of us, and we're sort of taking it back a little bit. I know I teach on fairy tales, as you know, metaphysical fairy tales in church, because they have so much rich meaning for us all, and I think they get placed in childhood because we think they are childish, but they're not. You know, they're deep symbolic ways of looking at these truths. I'm aware that we're reaching the end of the show, and I did want to cover a couple of other topics, Sandra. So first one is the hidden folk. You say there's hidden folk everywhere, okay? You know, I grew up in Wales and close to Ireland, and we talk about the fairy folk and the little people and all that. So who are these hidden folk?
Well, in every culture, even among the Native American people in the United States, I can't find a culture, you know, whether you go to Africa or Central Asia or Europe or North America, South America, people all over the world talk about the hidden folk, and those are what we, you know, in fairy tales write about as the fairies and the forest guardians that protect the forests and the Daedric realms and all that, the fairy folk that we used to know when we were little kids. Little kids talk about talking to the fairy people and the elves all the time. And in before pre-technological society, it was known that there was these races of beings, and I call them the hidden folk. We know them as the little people, but some of the little people are so much taller than us that I call them the hidden folk, and they're people, and they're beings who actually do caretake the earth. They do help to protect the earth, and so I encourage people, whether they live in a city or in the country, to do some kind of meditation, to go inside and to meet the hidden folk where they live, and to establish a relationship with them and ask how they can help them caretake. And there's also some incredible examples. There's just two that I mentioned in the book, but you see examples all over the world. In Scotland in the 1960s, a community came together and lived in a place called Fintorn in Scotland, and they were living in adverse conditions for growing any kind of food. The ground was complete sand, but the hidden folk, the Daedric realms, came through and helped them to grow these incredible vegetables that, you know, were beyond the sizes of anything that we would ever imagine possible in adverse conditions. And there's a place in the southeast called Perelandra where Michelle Small-Wright, she also did incredible work with the hidden folk, the Daedric realms, however you want to call them, and to do organic farming and to also raise vegetables that were so healthy and beyond anything that we would see in a typical garden. And so it's important for us to connect with these beings because they are already caretaking the earth, and we can partner with them in doing that. They do have a mistrust for humans, because they see how we mistreat the earth and the landscape where we are. So there's a certain amount of repairing work that we have to do to prove ourselves to them that we actually care about the earth as much as they do.
Right. Yeah, interesting. And ultimately, everything's connected. You have an appendix on omens, you know, the things that show us the way. And really, if everything's connected, then every part of nature can speak to us, right? And sometimes just little breakthroughs of an animal that shows up, or a butterfly, or whatever it might be, can be that sort of voice of recognition. You know, here I am. I'm here to show you something, and we can open ourselves to this. And I'd like to talk about it more, but we really are out of time. Folks, if you want to get hold of this book, it's available in all the usual outlets, right?
Yeah.
And if they want to get in touch with you, Sandra, you've got your own blog and website, Tell us what it is.
Sure. My website is sandraingerman.com, sandraingerman.com. And I have articles on shamanism that people can read, and I write a monthly column called The Transmutation News to keep people inspired to keep up spiritual practices in these incredible, challenging, changing times. So everything about my work is about trying to keep people inspired to the power of what we can do by working spiritually as a global community together.
Yeah, very good. And one thing I don't think I mentioned in the, and we've sort of mentioned it tangentially, but at the end of each chapter is a couple of pages of practice, things you can do, whether they be guided meditation type things or actual practices that you can go out into nature and do. And they're very down to earth. You can do them anywhere. And I think that's part of the blessing of the book. It gives us hands-on tools to put into practice these various things. So we may not be able to get up into the high desert or out into the rainforest or whatever, but we can do it like I did with the hummingbird. We can do it right where we are. Miraculous things can show up in the least expected places. So let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Sandra. Next week, my wife, Wendy, actually joins me again. We're going to discuss what we experienced on our recent journey to Japan. We got back from 18 days in Japan, had an amazing time, and we're going to share some of the influences we had in terms of the people, Mother Nature in Japan, and also the amazing spirituality of Japan. So join us there next week. And right now I want to say thanks to Sandra Ingerman for being with me. It's been a joy.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thank you for the brilliant work you're doing out there. It's great.
Oh, well, that's done likewise to you. And thanks, folks, for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week. All right, bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Of thousands of listeners, like you, have been transformed through the ministry of Paulette Pipe and her program, Touching the Stillness, one of the longest-running programs on Unity Online Radio. Paulette's latest album of guided meditations, Blissful Stillness, is a new and different experience. The mystical quality of her beautiful voice will reverberate through a Zen-style meditation, a mudra meditation, which are yoga hand positions to deepen your practice, and guided meditations, which we know and love. It features a new instrumental sound by Kelly Hunt with a bonus track by Kathy Zavada. Experience a blissful immersion into quiet and stillness by purchasing your own copy at shop.unityonline.org.
Blissful stillness. Come.
Repeat the words, God is taking care of it, and it will become clear that you are the channel. and that God is the doer of good works through you.
This meditative moment, adapted from Mary Kupferle's God Will See You Through, is brought to you by Unity.
Ever notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IamDivine2022.